This podcast was recorded at Hartford Street Zen Center, Isanji, in San Francisco. Please help support our temple by making a donation at hszc.org.
Well, this is our last full day of retreat together. And I want to thank everyone for participating. I've been participating a little less than I had intended to. But even so, I feel borne up by everyone's effort. Which suggests it's to some degree a kind of effort that isn't so dependent upon our individual boundaries. But there's a collective heart and strength that isn't anyone's possession. And yet it's very much alive. Actually, there have been a few people who wanted to, or intended to join the retreat, and various things happened. A couple of people got sick. And I had to wonder if, as is sometimes said, Dharma practice will occasionally cause karma to ripen suddenly. Whether that's literally true or not, I don't know, but I have heard that. And I guess 1972 or so, during one of Kala Rinpoche's visits here to San Francisco, I took refuge with him and did a couple of empowerments, and there was a Bodhisattva vow ceremony, which I hadn't experienced before. And it was in the tantric style, so as you may know, there's a kind of a tantric meal, a tantric feast that's part of the ceremony, and so at different times the assistants would go around and they would hand out something to eat or drink. I only remember two things, actually. One was gumdrops, which I really liked. And then they came around and they poured like a palmful of something, and everybody was drinking it. So I went, because it was vodka or something. And it was really potent alcohol. And alcohol, of course, is one of the five... Not forbidden, but five kind of dangerous substances. The others are
gumdrops.
I'm not sure what the gumdrops were supposed to, which niche that was supposed to fill. But there's alcohol, flesh. Fish, sex, and some very peculiar item that no one really seems to understand the significance of, parched kidney bean. Now, go figure. So they handed these things out. And I remember there must have been, I don't know, 40 or 50 people. And it was a very powerful ceremony. And towards the end, I started to feel very funny. And by the time I had driven back to Hillsborough, to the family home, I was really sick. And I had a raging fever. It turned into a very nasty flu that lasted quite a few days. And I always felt like this was not a coincidence to experience this bodhisattva empowerment ceremony and then to have a karmic illness flare up like that. Maybe that's what happened. So our friends who were felled by illness and couldn't join us in the retreat, they are somewhere ripening their karma. So in that way, they are with us still, and we're supporting their practice too. So if this were a standard 7-day retreat, this would be somewhere around day 3. And usually day 3 and 4 are where the physical intensity is in the foreground for a great many people, most people. And it's at that point that the danger of not taking proper care of yourself is most acute. There was a time at Zen Center where basically you were kind of encouraged not to take proper care of yourself, which was foolish and a wrong teaching. And as a result, we actually wasn't that unusual to lose people permanently. People who are fed so much bitter medicine that it turned their stomachs and they never came back to practice. That, of course, is a that has serious karmic consequences of its own for the perpetrators. So we are warned. And I've been suggesting that we make sure we're looking after ourselves properly. Usually people are told, you know, well, you know, you have to follow the schedule completely. But that's just the, I call that the printed version. And the actual instruction would be more like, follow the schedule completely, and if you can't, do something that benefits you and others. If you have to take a nap or a walk or go have a slice from Marcello's pizza, whatever it is, do that, but do that with the spirit that you're also including others in looking after yourself. Realizing that if you are well, it will be easier for others to be well. So often at that point in a retreat, people feel some shift. And the intensity of the physical manifestations kind of reveals another face, which is something like uh, reveals that this intensity is not separate or cut off or different from the spaciousness of our body-mind. So it's not some intrusion upon that spaciousness. It's just another face of it. And that usually means that we can find some, we can be found by some composure in the midst of dealing with whatever's happening in some sensible way. So I came rather late to long retreat practice. I caught up a little bit, to the extent that even what some might regard as a short retreat has the power of a longer retreat to be what my teacher has called like an oil change. So here we only seem to be able to get our oil changed once a year or so, but that's still pretty good. And as I've said before, we shouldn't look at our retreat as a watered down version of the real thing. That is a mistaken view. Some people become real junkies for retreat because they just love the way they feel at the end. It's like whoever that was hitting me on the head with a hammer has stopped. Now it's just really great. Everything looks beautiful. And I'm floating around, you know, and that lasts for, I don't know, a couple of days. And then our ordinary karmic life is right in front of us again. So there's a temptation there to to be in that kind of floaty place all the time. The teaching, though, I think is pretty clear. The teaching warns us against that kind of attachment. And after a retreat, we may have some feeling like, "Oh, this is how the Buddhas feel." So I'm definitely going to stay here. And of course, it doesn't work out that way. But this has been known for a long time. This is not something new. I was looking at a story. As you know, the Chan teachers were often known by the place where they taught. It's very, very common. And there's a Tang Dynasty teacher who's quite famous named Shishuang. And then a couple of generations later, in the same place, same community, same monastery, there was another teacher, and he also was known as Shishuang. He was a Song Dynasty luminary. And one day he was with his attendant, and he said to his attendant, the great master, Dao Wu, taught, don't discard that side to get to this side. What do you think of that? And the attendant thought a moment and then said, well, that's just like you, teacher. And Shishuang said, oh, how so? So the attendant walked from east to west and stopped and stood there looking expectant. And Shishuang said, you have just discarded that side for this side. And the attendant was sorrowful. So we might wonder what sides are being referred to. Do not discard that side to get to this side. Another source of that teaching is, of course, the Heart Sutra. Can you see that?
Discard one or the other. They're the same.
Yeah.
Don't get stuck in emptiness. Don't get stuck in form.
That's right. And it can be quite tempting one might come to some conclusion that one has arrived in emptiness and can stay there. And if so, the cost will be discarding something precious. So we may not know exactly what was the attendance error. Sorry, I don't know what the heck's going on out there, but it's making it hard to hear.
He just chose one side instead of the other, one side at a time.
Well, he may have assumed that he was on the, right side of things and demonstrated it with his little procession. But his teacher said, that's exactly what I didn't want you to do.
I wonder if he wanted him to jump back and forth really quick.
If so, this is not spoken of in the story, but yeah, some sort of Cirque du Soleil thing. Yeah. Well, it's not just in Buddha Dharma that you see this tendency to rid oneself of the awkward, the inconvenient, the base, the homely. Just get rid of all that stuff. And thereby arrive at sainthood. Well, that doesn't work. And sometimes the people who try that wind up in a very unfortunate situation. Recently somebody asked me, did I know anything about the Western Buddhist order? And I said, well, kind of. And they, as you may know, they had some troubles. Some of the senior people felt that they had taken up residence in that side. Or in other words, we're on this side, so whatever we do is fine. So there was some, apparently some sexual coercion going on. And of course, that's not the only case. So these may have been instances where the belief was, oh, that's fine, that's been discarded. Now we are in the groove. And sometimes it has been said of such people that they are so far on whichever side that we, ordinary people, will never understand what they do.
Probably true.
Well, maybe. But, you know, how useful is that? So, believing that they had discarded the inconvenient side and were now dwelling in the Elysian fields, so whatever they did must be unimpeachable Dharma. Probably all of you realize that doesn't work. And that if you cultivate that state of mind, one thing that gets discarded is the precepts. A certain abbot of the Zen Center was heard to say, Well, that doesn't apply to me anymore. Big mistake. Oh, before I forget entirely, yesterday was Buddha's Enlightenment Day. Sorry, kind of skated over that. And we're going to have the Bodhi Day ceremony tomorrow. But I forgot to wish everyone happy Bodhi Day yesterday, so I apologize. Maybe we could say former Sangha member wrote a lovely meditation on Buddha's awakening. And I tried to post it to the Harvard Street website, but I, for some reason, couldn't. So I put it on my webpage. So if you like, go have a look at it. It's quite sweet in its way. And there wasn't really any suggestion in there that Shakyamuni Buddha had escaped to some other side, even though that's one of the traditional viewpoints. Another chap who's a member of the Soto Zen Buddhist Association, I think I mentioned this already, and has was discovered to have cancer of the esophagus. Has a community of some sort in Japan. He's a Westerner, who's fluent in Japanese and has a congregation there. And he's also the fellow who has done ordination ceremonies over the internet, which raised some eyebrows. But he wrote a very touching posting to the listserv, and he said, oh, and Facebook also, he said, you know, cancer's kind of scary. I have times where I'm pretty scared, but also doesn't matter so much. So, if there's some pressure like that in our life, you know, some dangerous illness or something like that, again, we may feel like, oh, if I could just escape to the other side, and I'll leave that, whatever it is, behind. But that point of view kind of doesn't respect our magnificent human spirit and what it's capable of. So even if during retreat we may feel there's a lot of stuff accumulating on one side, and we'd really like to sneak away from it. That doesn't happen. Well, it can, but that's, certain yogic tricks are possible, but that's sort of like getting blind drunk. I mean, that works for a while, but eventually you sober up. And then, boy, are you sorry. So I, as I said the other day, instead of trying to remember the traditional poems that go with these stories, I'm trying to come up with my own. They're not so good, but it's a good exercise. So I thought I'd write one about this story. Let's see. Switching sides is a fool's game. Just ask Shushuang. This and that are like the front and back foot in walking. So drop your crutches and stroll over to the other side. The old adept warns. Do not discard that side to get to this. But I am not like that. One mountain says, whichever side you're on, I'm with you. Questions today?
Yes. Are you concluding that there are no sides?
That
there are no sides whatsoever?
One could try that on, see how it works. Mm-hmm.
What do you mean?
Give it a try. Okay, there are no sides. Maybe we could say, all right, until lunch, we're going to say there are no sides. And just see how that works.
Yeah, tricky.
Yeah.
Well, I often think that the problem in our world is that people never leave this side to check anything out. And that seems to me, I mean, yes, you can create some havoc leaving and not returning, but it's nice to have a place where we encourage people to take a little trip.
Yeah. Yeah. After all, Shushuang just says, don't discard that. He doesn't say, just remain stuck in the mud indefinitely and cause trouble, which is what happens a lot, you're right. So it's nice to have a, I don't know, glimpse of something else. Thank you for your patience. And let's carry on for a little while longer.